Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
60 and 11 o'clock. It's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Right now, says you on Nashville Public Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, a laugh-a-minute linguistic lyric under the firm guiding hand of yours truly.
Richard, I'd like to run the show now.
I understand. How much worse could you do, really? Listen closely today, you never know. You just might hear a reference or two to classic comedy. You didn't do the chalice from the palace holds the brew that is true.
Brew that is
true.
And
that, eh?
Right.
For sure you'd go there.
Yeah, the Vandals took the handles.
And where will it all end, this, our search for all words odd and curious?
When you make a lemon-sucking gesture with your lips to denote...
It drives goldfish crazy.
To make the...
Yes, it does. Yes, that's right.
Stand outside the bowl and taunt them.
That's right.
All on Says You after this.
News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Uncertainty in Egypt over the country's presidential election seems to be coming to a close. The state election commission is in the middle of a press conference to announce the winner.
In the name of Allah.
It's still not yet clear if the Muslim Brotherhood's candidate, Mohamed Morsi, or Hosni Mubarak's last prime minister, Ahmed Shafiq, will lead the country. But thousands are gathered in Cairo's Tahrir Square for the announcement. There are fears of violence. Authorities have deployed extra security forces in the streets and near key institutions. NATO has confirmed that it will meet Tuesday to discuss the Syrian downing of a Turkish military jet. Turkish Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoglu said his country will present its case to NATO command and the United Nations, as Rasha Ilas reports from Beirut.
Turkish Foreign Minister said the response will not be precipitous or sudden. Turkey will decide on the timing. Ankara claims that the Turkish jet strayed briefly into Syrian airspace, and it was called back immediately by Turkish command. The Syrians shot it down 15 minutes later in international waters, according to the Turkish report. Turkey has also insisted that their jet was flying under Turkish flag, that it was unarmed, doing training maneuvers, and not gathering intelligence. They added that these facts were clear and undisputed, and they blame the Syrians for not sending a warning before shooting down the jet. Damascus has claimed that the jet appeared as a foreign object in its airspace. The incident came a day after a Syrian pilot defected to Jordan. Rasha Ilas, NPR News, Beirut.
In the western U.S., a new fire sparked in Colorado this weekend has prompted more evacuations, even as a High Park fire near Fort Collins continues to burn. From member station KRCC in Colorado Springs, Andrea Chalfin reports.
Smoke billowed from the Pike National Forest as what's being called the Waldo Canyon Fire took hold. Temperatures approached 100 degrees in nearby Colorado Springs and aren't expected to improve. A Forest Service spokesman said the fire is burning in multiple directions at one time, which makes fighting the blaze more challenging. So far, the fire has burned around 2,000 acres and over 1,000 homes are evacuated. Tourist attractions like Pikes Peak and area campgrounds are also closed. For NPR News, I'm Andrea Chalfin in Colorado Springs.
Forecasters say Tropical Storm Debbie could grow to near hurricane strength, but they aren't sure where it will go. Authorities are on alert for the possibility of flooding and strong winds from Texas to Florida. Angela Rains of the Terrebonne, Louisiana Levee District says people all along the Gulf Coast need to keep an eye on Debbie.
Any change in direction can mean a huge difference for Houma, Louisiana, for, you know, Mobile, for any of those areas that are vulnerable to these types of events.
A tornado possibly touched down in southeastern Florida yesterday, and forecasters warned others are possible. This is NPR. A Chinese spacecraft has carried out its first ever manual docking of a manned spacecraft with an orbiting module. As NPR's Lisa Lim reports from Beijing, the maneuver comes on the same day a Chinese submersible dove to new depths.
The space maneuver was shown live on television, underlining its importance. The Shenzhou 9 rocket had already made one docking with the module, but that was by remote control. They separated for about 1.5 hours before reconnecting under manual control. This puts China a step closer to its aim of building its own space station. the astronauts were greeted by a crew of Chinese oceanauts from the depths of the Mariana Trench. They set a new Chinese deep sea record today, diving 23,000 feet beneath the Pacific Ocean. It's still far from James Cameron's record dive depths, but the twin achievements on a single day highlight China's ambitions, both in space and in the ocean depths. Louisa Lim, NPR News, Beijing.
A new world record has been set at the U.S. Olympic trials. Ashton Eaton, a 24-year-old from Bend, Oregon, broke the world record in the decathlon this weekend at his home track in Eugene. He finished with 9,039 points, beating the old mark by 13 points.
I knew that there was no way I was not going to get the world record. And in large part because of just the atmosphere around the stadium. So there really wasn't much going through my mind except this is happening. This is happening right now.
Despite rainy and cold conditions, Eaton won 7 of the decathlon's 10 events. He now heads into the London Olympics as a favorite. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world on the web at hewlett.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Los Angeles comes from the Skirball Cultural Center. Exhibits, tours, and special events for all ages and interests. On the web at skirball.org. That's Skirball.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
From the Skirball Cultural Center in Los Angeles, California, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. A man whose dignity is unsurpassed, his integrity unquestioned, his taste in shoes, not so much. Barry Nolan. Hey. A woman whose morals are impeccable, her character unassailable, her passion for fashion unimaginable, Francine Akbar. And his motives are pure, his record unimpeachable, he's a paragon among paragons, Mr. Tony Khan. And who leads tonight?
Oh, Francine.
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 Will be the captain. To my left, team two, he's our ex post facto ad hoc sine qua non, Arnie Reisman. She's our belle image, our joueur superbe, our symphony fantastique, Paula Lyons. And she's our fair lady. She's our blithe spirit. Get ready for a strange interlude with Miss Carolyn Gray Fox. And who leads over there?
The sine qua non.
Yeah, the Latin from Manhattan. Right here.
Arnie will be the captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points, so whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate, we always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin. Last fall, our friend Frank Cunningham of Arlington, Massachusetts, turned us on to the Ig Nobel Awards.
Oh.
Achievements in science and research that first make people laugh and then make them think. We hope that is the case in this year's category as you try to define the winning effort of this year's winners from the clues provided. Carolyn, the prize in physics went to New England researchers Parkin, Williams, and Priest for demonstrating the Argyle cold weather stabilization process.
The Argyle cold weather stabilization.
What do you suppose they were up to?
Argyle, does this have to do with sweaters?
Not sweaters, no.
Socks.
All right. The Argyle what?
Cold weather stabilization.
Okay. Project. How long your socks stay cold when they're wet?
No, but that's an interesting...
How long?
That'd be an interesting study.
How long they stay up?
No, that's not it. It has more to do with stabilization.
Okay, it has to do with a cold sock.
Stabilization.
Yeah. Stabilization. How long do your socks stay cold once you put your feet in them?
Ooh, another study that I'm sure the government is undertaking.
It makes sense. I mean, how long does it take your toes to warm up your socks?
No, this is this has much more to do with the stabilization aspect than anything else.
Stabilize your circulation, perhaps?
And no,
and
I'm going to give you...
Temperature in your extremities there?
No. It's literally the process of stabilizing something. Any help from the audience? Okay, 7 points for you guys.
Yeah.
Wait till you hear this. They conclusively demonstrated that on icy footpaths in the winter, people slip and fall less often if they wear their socks on the outsides of their shoes.
There you go.
They're looking for a grant to prove the same thing happens when you crawl down the street.
I have the references here. You can look up the research online.
And right.
All right, try this one, Tony.
Briefly.
The Peace Prize. Get this. The Peace Prize.
Peace Prize.
To Richard Stevens, John Atkins, and Andrew Kingston of Keele University in the UK for their work in profane analgesic remediation in mallet thumb incidents.
Mallet thumb incidents.
Say that again, please.
Oh. Yeah.
Profane analgesic remediation in mallet thumb incidents.
Oh. Mallard thumb?
Mallet. M-A-L-L-E-T.
If you bang your thumb with a hammer.
Don't shout right.
Don't swear.
If you actually exclaim when you've hit your thumb with a hammer, it actually makes you feel better than keeping it stifled.
And for that, they won the Peace Prize. 10 points. Very good.
I don't know. That would have been...
They actually confirmed that swearing relieves pain.
Yes.
The research is there. Look, you know, you can find it.
But we already knew that. We already knew that, whereas wearing your socks on the outside of your shoes... All right.
And I think a lot of money went into this. I'm not sure.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Try this one, Arnie. The prize, the Ig Nobel Prize in Medicine, went to Simon Rietveld and Ija van Beest, two Dutch researchers who discovered the ups and downs of alveolar-roll-me-over connection. The ups and downs of the alveolar-roll-me-over connection. What do you suppose they found?
Alveolar.
Roll me over.
Hey,
something to do with your lungs.
We're talking about the lungs. Okay.
But then when they roll you over, you breathe more easily.
If you're lying on your back or
your front.
You breathe better under.
You breathe better on your side.
You breathe better.
Well, the ups and downs of the alveolar roll me over connection. What do you think that means?
Doing push-ups?
No. You're right to think it helps you breathe better, yes.
It helps you breathe better. Oh, if you put your arms up.
I guess you could, in this instance.
Standing up and sitting down.
Not standing up and sitting down.
I think this is a lazy man's Heimlich maneuver. You lie down and have somebody sit on top of you.
No. Have anything to do with snoring? Rolling?
It does not. It's ups and downs and rolling over that really...
But you're on a Ferris wheel.
You're on a Ferris wheel.
Not a Ferris wheel.
A seesaw.
A roller coaster.
A roller coaster is exactly right. We led you there kicking and screaming, but that's true.
Yes.
These Dutch researchers found that symptoms of asthma can be treated with a roller coaster ride. And having asthma, I absolutely believe that's true.
How many points for this?
Give them 8 points for that. No. Nice
job. And for hay fever, skee ball is really effective.
Skee ball.
I've heard that, actually.
Right.
Francine, try this one. The Management Prize went to Italian researchers Puccino, Rapisarda, and Garofalo for demonstrating once and for all what every company person has always known. What did they conclusively show?
That the boss is an idiot.
10 points. That's exactly right.
Perfect.
How did you know that so fast?
I've been one.
I see. The Italian researchers proved mathematically that organizations become more efficient if they promote people completely at random.
Richard, I'd like to run the show now.
I understand. How much worse could you do, really?
Exactement.
All right. Well, here comes a softball for you, Paula.
Oh, okay. I could
try this one. The chemistry prize went to Eric Adams of MIT, Scott Sokolowski of Texas A&M, and Stephen Masutani of the University of Hawaii and British Petroleum. For disproving what?
British Petroleum is in this?
They all won the prize.
For proving that...
For disproving what?
Disproving what? Disproving that oil won't harm the ocean. Yeah,
well, in a way, you're very close.
Yeah. There's no way you're going to have oil leak.
Oh, disproving the notion that there can never be a failure of underwater oil exploration.
Nothing so sophisticated.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That oil will sink to the bottom, but...
Well, you know what? I'm going to give you 10 points for disproving the old belief that oil and water don't mix.
Don't mix, yeah.
Oh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they all showed up to receive the prize. However, no one from British Petroleum came to accept the prize.
He went back to his life. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We all want to do that, don't we?
And finally, Barry, the public health prize. this is awful. My wife said, don't give him this one. This is terrible.
Okay.
The public health prize went to Manuel Barbieto, Charles Matthews, and Larry Taylor of the Industrial Health and Safety Office for their work with, among others, clean-shaven clinicians. What hirsute hypothesis did they determine?
That actually not having a beard or a mustache or facial hair made you less likely to carry an infectious agent which could affect your patient.
That's it.
10 points. That's exactly right. Very good.
Hey, Barry, what cable station are you watching?
They determined by experiment that microbes cling to bearded scientists. So if you're going to be in the lab, wear a hairnet, shave, whatever, but microbes will cling to your hair. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from our friends, the Woodwind Trio of the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Arnie, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points up for grabs to Francine, if she can find the bluffer, or to you, Arnie, if she can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word maloic.
Maloic.
M-A-L-O-I-K.
Maloic.
Gentlemen? Says You begins its fall season of live performances with a trip to Nashville, Tennessee, September 8th and 9th. We'll be at the Polk Theater at TPAC for two shows. Then on Saturday, October 20th, we'll be in Milwaukee for a little constant badgering Wisconsin wordplay with Says You. There's our New Year's weekend taping in Boston and more soon to follow. You can find tickets, information, and details for all our shows at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. So remember, that's September in Nashville, October in Milwaukee, and December in Boston. It's the new season of live performances of Says You. We'll be right back. Hi, I'm Richard Scherr. As part of its 50th anniversary celebration, Nashville Public Radio is bringing Says You back to TPAC, the Catapult Theater in Nashville, September 8th and 9th. Tickets, information, and details are now available at NashvillePublicRadio.org. So remember, that's Saturday, September 8th, and Sunday, September 9th. Be sure to get your whole self down to TPAC for the Nashville editions of Says You.
PRI's The World brings you voices from around the globe.
They're hiding these women not just from their relatives who want to punish them.
It's your daily source for international news and a gateway to cultures beyond our borders.
I think I'll use my skills to also help others be connected to this global village.
I'm Marco Werman. Join me right here for the next edition of The World.
Weeknights at 9 o'clock.
You can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high quality copies available. That is the Wing Trio from the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. Please thank 10th grader Daniel Bernstein, 9th grader Nathan Kirsoff, and 11th grader Jonathan Galbraith. Thank you very much for doing that, guys. I want to take a moment also and thank our scorekeepers for this game. That's Max Offsay of Los Angeles, Mr. Benjamin Schur of Parts Unknown. Thank you very much, guys, for keeping the score. We've had a few moments with the word Maloic. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Maloic is a challenge in radio. It comes to us from the world of hand gestures. It is, let's see, it's like this. It's the gesture you make with your index finger and your little finger while you hold down the others, like hook 'em horns.
Ah, the old Texas Maloic hook 'em horns thing?
Yes.
I always wondered what that was. That's called the Maloic.
Could you use that in an insult, please?
You're so Maloic.
Maloic out your shorts.
The old the hand gesture where you hold down the middle fingers and you... Trying to describe this for the radio audience. You stick up your...
The index and the little finger.
The index and the little finger.
You hold down the others.
Right, and that's like this, the old hook 'em horns thing, okay? That's, it could be that or something else. Arnie, what say you?
Well, it is a sort of physical gesture of like a curse. It's the old kiss of death kind of glare. It's the noun meaning to...
No.
Well, it is giving the evil eye.
Is it the verb giving the
evil? It is the evil eye.
The evil eye. The
You're
evil
giving
eye.
The Maloic.
Is the Maloic, it's the evil
Don't
eye.
Don't ask me what culture, but it's,
give someone the evil eye, you're giving them a Maloic.
Yes.
Okay? Could be that. Or, Paula, a third alternative.
Well, Maloic is actually a word that means unable to read sign language.
Unable to read sign language. A great many people in this audience are just downright Maloic. Okay. It's either that, the inability to read sign language, the evil eye, or the old hook 'em horns gesture.
Sounds all the same to me. Huh?
Yeah, it's one of those three. And the choice, Francine, is yours.
Well, I'm so glad. I've just been reading a little Shakespeare lately.
Ah.
You laugh. I am in the arts business in Boston. And I came across a wonderful phrase in The Merchant of Venice, beshrew thine eyes, which is the evil eye. Mm. And I think maybe there's some...
But that is Malocchio.
Oh, from Malvolio?
Well,
I think it's from margarine or something, you know, mazzolio, what was it called?
Mazzola.
But would they be making a word out of the Italian? I think it's malocchio, maloic. I wonder.
And what does that word mean?
Bad eyes. It means give the evil eye. Malocchio.
Well, there you are.
And I'm waggling my fingers, as you can see, in the hand gesture.
Well,
that
there you are. That, yeah. So it's
and
beshrew
if
thine
can't
eyes
read sign
in
language,
Polish.
It means I'm about to poke your eyes out. Why aren't you moving?
Okay, so unable to read sign language, that's kind of a reach.
I like it.
They've all been reading each other's answers. They're all about hands, right? Or about gestures.
And Maloic.
Don't you thumb me.
I'm going with the curse.
The curse, the evil eye. Arnold, Francine says that Maloic is the evil eye. Is that in fact what it is?
Maloic. Please make something up.
Which you did. All right, audience, what do you think? Carolyn, I think this audience is going with the hook 'em horns, that's what the maloic is. Is that in fact what it is?
Maloic, the gesture you make with the index and little finger while
there
holding
the
others.
There you go. Good job, audience. 10 points.
So it's closely related to the evil eye.
That is
10
Maloic
points for Arnie's
that
team.
Is, yeah.
Let's go on to round three. Our dear friend Margie Sharon of Boston, Massachusetts, called the other day and asked if we could use a question. She and her husband, Peter, had been collecting items for the category we call famous first lines. I'll give you the first line of a famous work of literature. 7 points if you can tell me the name of that work. 3 more for the author. For example, call me Ishmael.
Moby Dick.
First line from Moby Dick.
Moby by, of course.
Skippy Melville. Right. Herman had nothing to do with it.
Herman, just Skippy wrote it all.
That's right.
It was originally Call Me a Taxi, and he said,
That's right. Call me something. Call me.
No,
quick,
he didn't like
no,
it.
Call me.
All right. These are going to be hard, but try it, Carolyn.
All right.
First line of a great work. I need the work and the author. The cold passed reluctantly from the earth, and the retiring fogs revealed an army stretched out on the hills resting.
Mm-hmm. All right, this sounds like a wartime novel.
It is.
It's not a farewell to arms.
It is not. The cold passed reluctantly from the earth.
You have an idea?
And the retiring fogs revealed an army stretched out on the hills resting.
It's not Red Badge of Courage, is it?
Oh, yes, it is.
It's Stephen Crane.
Stephen, it is the Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane. It was a second guess, 8 points for that. Good job. Try this one, Tony. I guess you either know this one or you don't. I'm sorry, but it's a tough one.
Yeah.
Mother died today, maybe it was yesterday.
That's Albert Camus.
Yep.
And it's the rebel. I mean, the rebel.
No.
It is not.
Not the other one. The other one. L'Autre.
Not the plague.
No.
The
what?
No escape?
No.
Nope.
No, that's the title. Yeah. No.
It is Camus. It is Camus.
Albert Camus, she died. It's the one set in Algeria, and it's about his mother, and what the hell is I can see it upside down. I like to read upside down. There was, oh, God.
Oh, his hands are on his thighs. This is a real mental block, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, God, is it not? It's not the rebel.
It's not the flies.
You get 3 points for Camus. I'm going to go to the other side.
Bucky the Stranger.
Yes, that's
stranger.
Right.
L'Étranger.
L'Étranger. Oh.
Yes.
Boy. Tony lost about 7 pounds on that one. I'm so sorry. That was as solid a mental block as I've ever seen.
I don't have that much to spare.
Try this one, Arnie.
I already did my
first line of a book.
Yeah.
If you really want to hear about it, the first thing you'll probably want to know is where I was born and what my lousy childhood was like.
Oh, Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger.
Here's 10
Give
points.
Him a hard
That's
one.
A good job. I think they knew that one. That's
really
good.
Want to know about
Try this one, Francine. You better not never tell nobody but God.
Oh, color purple.
It's the color purple. Purple?
The color purple is correct.
What's your name?
Albert Camus.
Albert Camus.
Come on, guys, help me.
The color purple.
Oprah.
Do we have
Oprah? Oprah.
She played the main character.
Yes, I think we have to go to the other side.
Alice Walker.
Alice Walker. Alice Walker, 7 points for that sign. All right, try this one. Here you go, Paula. It was a queer, sultry summer, the summer they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, and I didn't know what I was doing in New York. Oh, everybody is oohing and aahing out there. It was a queer, sultry summer, the summer they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, and I didn't know what I was doing in New York.
Ooh. It's not a Philip Roth, is it?
It is not.
Is it Mailer?
No.
No.
I didn't know what I was doing in New York.
I don't think they're going to get this one. I think they're barking up the wrong tree here.
Barking up the wrong tree.
I don't think so.
A tree grows in Brooklyn?
No, not a tree grows in Brooklyn.
1953.
Don't say it out loud. Does the other side know?
Lassie at the fair.
Lassie at the fair. I said don't say it out loud.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a very sensitive side. Lassie wasn't given much exposure.
I don't think anybody. Do you know, Barry?
Portnoy's Complaint?
No, it's not.
No, it's like earlier. Tropic of Cancer. It's has earlier. That kind of feeling
no,
to it.
No, it's not at all. I'm going to go to the audience for The Bell Jar. Sylvia Plath.
Ah.
This is a tough one, but I just want to try it, Barry. There's enough clues. Maybe you can get this. The towers of zenith aspired above the morning mist.
Oh, yeah.
Austere towers of steel and cement and limestone, sturdy as cliffs and delicate as silver rods.
His nickname is Red.
Yes.
He won the Nobel Prize.
Yes.
He's American. Babbitt. And Sinclair Lewis.
You got it. Yep.
10 points. Nice job. The clues were there, but that's a good job, Tony. When I first got that one, I couldn't figure it. This week's suggestion for a spotlight round comes from Jinx Jackson of New York City. Jinx writes, I've been listening for several years now, and I've heard some really questionable questions. They got me thinking, do you have any idea what's the worst question you ever asked? I bet it would make a great spotlight round. Well, Jinx, if you ask me, the worst ever came on a day in season 5 when Tom Kemp joined us to play a round of Odd Man Out. Let's begin and make Mr. Reisman very happy with a round of Odd Man Out. Which of the following does not belong in the list? 5 points for the correct answer, 5 points for telling me why. Carolyn?
Mm-hmm.
Knife, K-N-I-F-E.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbit, R-A-B-B-I-T, pot, P-O-T, and stew, S-T-E-W. Knife, rabbit, pot, and stew.
Jackknife, jackrabbit, and jackpot.
Jackpot.
Stew is the odd
man out.
That's 10 points. Very good, Carolyn. Very well done. Look at Tom. Tom's intimidated.
Yes, and my teleprompter isn't working.
No problem. Try this one, Tom. Oxtail, O-X-T-A-I-L, oxtail, sheep shank, S-H-E-E-P-S-H-A-N-K, lark's head, L-A-R-K apostrophe S, head, or cat's paw, C-A-T apostrophe S, P-A-W. Oxtail, sheep shank, lark's head, or cat's paw.
You're either in soup or knots.
I think you're in knots.
You think you're in knots?
I think you're in knots.
Yeah.
Ox head I've never heard of.
I'm pretty confident about cat's paw.
I think oxtail is the odd person out, and the rest of them are knots.
That was a great struggle.
Red one.
Very good, Tom.
Red one.
Excellent, Tom.
Yes. He opens with a dinger. Very good,
yes,
Mr. Kemp.
Yo, Kemp.
Arnie. Over the years, I have written almost 4,000 questions for this show, and without question, this is the absolute worst. What is the odd man out? Actually, in this case, who is the odd man out?
Oh, here we go.
Ivan the Terrible. Peter the Great. Floyd Patterson or John McEnroe? Ivan the Terrible, Peter the Great, Floyd Patterson, or John McEnroe?
Who's Floyd Patterson?
Oh, great boxer.
Heavyweight champion of the world. Yeah. Boxer. So you have a boxer,
a tennis player, and a couple of Russian emperors.
We're not going with handed again, are we?
We are not.
The last time you threw John
Ivan
McEnroe.
Ivan the Terrible, Peter the Great, Floyd Patterson, or John McEnroe?
Floyd Patterson is the odd man out.
For what reason?
Because it's also John McEnroe the Terrible.
You know, I thought we were going to go there, but no, that's not correct.
Does this have anything to do with the length of the reign?
Tenure?
Well, that's what I said. How long did they reign?
Does anyone over there have any idea? This was so worthy of you, Arne.
Well,
but I figured I'd give it a shot. Anybody from the other side have any thoughts?
Okay.
I will give you this hint. Ivan the Terrible is the odd man out. So there goes five.
Because he's the fourth.
He's what?
So he's the fourth?
The Great.
Now, I think I got to give you the answer. All right. I'm going to get booed. I don't care.
Okay.
The odd man out is Ivan the Terrible because Ivan the Terrible's most famous opponent in battle was not a Swede.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
That's what we call in the industry a rolling boom.
Who was Floyd Patterson's
Floyd Patterson's most
Ingemar
Johansson, Bjorn Borg, with John McEnroe, the famous 4.5 hour, and Peter the Great, of course, Charles the 12th in Sweden. Ivan the Terrible did not fight.
Of course. That's
a wonderful question until asked.
Yeah.
Really?
It really is. It's a classic. It just should never be used.
Yeah.
Right. Whoa.
All right, Francine. Okay. Let's try this one. Cage, C-A-G-E. Bar, B-A-R. Toad, T-O-A-D. And pigeon, P-I-G-E-O-N. Well, the other side seems to
have
gotten that one pretty
fast.
Cage, bar, toad, and pigeon.
Yep.
Well, is it? It's not names, right? Because John Cage, but then then Pigeon Toad, but then there's a toad there. So
there was John Cage and Walter Pigeon, but that's as far as we went on that one.
Yeah. Right, Bar B A R.
Well, the audience has it.
Funked up.
The other side has it.
I think.
Go, please jump in.
The band has it.
The band has it.
Let's say Cage is the one out.
Well, Cage is the odd man out. Why would that be?
Okay, Bar Hop.
Mm-mm.
Nope. No.
We go with hopping?
No.
We do not, because a pigeon hop, as far as I'm concerned, is a dance I don't want to go to. We have to go to the other side.
Yeah. Bar stool, toad stool, and stool pigeon.
That's exactly right. The odd man out is Cage. Yeah. So they get 5 points for that. They did get Cage.
Crime.
Try this one, Paula. Gandhi. G-H-A-N-D-I. Citizen Kane. Sunset Boulevard or The Apartment?
Okay, all movies. And what joins them? What separates them?
Gandhi, Citizen Kane, Sunset Boulevard.
Oh, well, I think it's The Apartment because the others are biographies of one sort or another.
I'm going to give you 7 points for that. To get the other three, you got to get what I had in mind here.
Okay, so The Apartment is correct.
The Apartment is correct.
All right. No. Well, there's a narrator in Sunset Boulevard who's dead. There's a narrator in Citizen Kane. Is he dead too?
They're all flashbacks.
No.
Yes, yeah.
Because the people are dead.
10 points. Very good. It begins Gandhi, Citizen Kane, and Sunset Boulevard all
begin
with
death.
The death of the main character,
and
work backward from there.
Right.
The Apartment does not. Very good. And finally, and this is a little unfair, Tony, but we'll have you try it. Norman Rockwell. Gilbert Stuart. George Mallory, M-A-L-L-O-R-Y, or Paul Revere.
Oh, my God. Well, George Mallory went on the top of Everest, Norman Rockwell, Paul Revere on a horse, and Gilbert Stuart painted George Washington. George Washington. They all knew George Washington except for Norman Rockwell.
I don't think Mallory, who died in 1924.
Well,
so.
Let's see, the other three. Was Mallory the mountain climber, or am I thinking?
He is, been, in fact.
Yeah,
the
Mallory and Hillary.
Rockwell, Stewart, and Revere all were artisans. They all used their hands except for...
You know, I was afraid of that, and I will give you some points, because Paul Revere was an artisan, silversmith,
obviously that's not the right answer.
That is not the right answer.
Okay. They all painted in their spare time except for Norman Rockwell, who did it for a living.
Maybe the clue here is the Gilbert Stuart painting, with which you are probably familiar.
Right, yes.
All right.
Oh. Right. There's a really sour expression. That portrait, that George.
This is tough. Any help from that, son?
Paul Revere.
Give them 5 points, because they did get the artisan, and I will give them 5 points. But any help from the other side?
Does this have anything to do with being unfinished?
It has everything to do with being unfinished.
George
Washington's Norman Rockwell's the odd man out?
Norman Rockwell is indeed very good, Arnie. Is the odd man
George
out.
George Mallory did not finish his climb.
No, he didn't.
Gilbert Stuart did not finish his portrait of Washington. And Paul Revere did not finish his ride.
And Paul Revere did not finish his ride because he was arrested. Why? Very good, Arnie. That's just excellent. Norman Rockwell is the one of the four who finished his best-known effort, which was American Gothic. Very good.
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. That's our look back. Now, back to the present. Let's go on to round four, which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff 10 points, Arnie, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few moments to come up with a definition for the word mimp. M-I-M-P.
M-I-M-P.
Mimp.
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 Gentlemen.
Mama pimp.
Just a quick reminder, on September 8th and 9th, Says You goes to Nashville, Tennessee for two live performances of the show. Then, on Saturday, October 20th, we'll be in Milwaukee for a little Wisconsin wordplay. Then, New Year's weekend, we'll be back in Boston for a little light carousing and some original syntax. You can find tickets, information, and details for all our shows at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. So remember, September in Nashville, October in Milwaukee, and December in Boston, the new season of performances of Says You. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, powerhouse Anne Marie Slaughter says women still can't have it all. Motherhood and pure ambition. We'll go to the phones on that. Plus, Love Itself, remade by market forces. Eva Illouz is with us. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Weekday mornings from 9 till 11. You're listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio. You can stay connected to Nashville Public Radio through our weekly email newsletters and on Facebook and Twitter. Find out more at WPLN.org. Sunny skies continuing today with the high in the mid-90s. Right now it's 85 degrees in Nashville at 9:44.
Thank you. When is Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, Dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's SAYSYOU. The Wing Trio from the Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. Thanks, guys. Yeah. We have had a few moments with the word mimp. We will go first to Tony Khan.
Well, not just a few moments with the word mimp, possibly several zillion mimps.
Ah.
It is the smallest possible measurable unit of time. It's the amount of time it takes a photon to cross the Planck length.
To cross the what?
Planck length.
Okay.
As in never, not even in a New York mimp.
Okay. The smallest possible measurement of time is a mimp. That could be, or it could be something else.
Is it measured by a mimpograph? Yes. Or a mimpogram.
Mimpometer,
no, a mimpometer.
I believe a mimpometer
would. Yeah.
Mimp is actually a verb, to mimp, and it refers to that opportunity where you make a lemon sucking gesture with your lips.
Denoting what?
I'm illustrating, but you can't see me.
When you make a lemon-sucking gesture with your lips to denote...
It drives goldfish crazy.
To make the...
Yes, it does. Yes, that's right.
Stand outside the bowl and taunt them.
That's right. Yes, or carp, even worse.
To make a lemon-sucking gesture with the lips is to mimp. Okay, could be that. Or Barry, something else.
A mimp is a minty fresh dirigible.
A minty fresh dirigible?
Oh. A minty fresh mimp.
I started to write it down. Right. I really did.
You know,
is that a gum commercial? Yes.
Hard to suck, but definitely worth a try.
It's the process for manufacturing that requires the least technical information.
The process for manufacturing that requires the least support, the least technical information, that's what the MIMP is.
Hmm.
It's either the process, a manufacturing process, boiled down to its elements, a lemon-sucking gesture with the lips, or the smallest possible moment of time. It's one of those three, and the choice, Arnie, is yours.
Ah, great.
Manufacturing that requires process. The least
amount, I think that might be a computer
technology.
Term. A computer counter, like MIMP, like make
term.
It menial for peons or something like that.
All right.
Smallest possible.
Right. Must I meet people?
Yeah, that one.
That one.
What you said.
Yeah. You know, that's your basic. I don't know. Lemon. How about berries? You want to go with berries?
Sure.
What
Why
you,
not?
When?
Yeah.
We're going to go with the with berries idea that it's the minimal amount of technology used in the process of manufacturing.
Barry, they have come to the conclusion that MIMP is the
Why
manufacturing
not?
Process that requires the least amount of technical support. Is that in fact what it is?
A MIMP, whatever it is not that.
Oh, well, there you go.
10 points. For a successful bluff. All right, audience, what do you think?
Employment, huh?
Time and weather.
How many say time? How many say lemons?
No.
Tony, I think it's a groundswell for the smallest measurable moment of time. Is that, in fact, what MIMP is?
I think you should all give a moment's thought to whether you're giving the lemon its due credit in this world.
In a time-worn gesture, MIMP. To purse the lips.
Wow.
To purse the lips is to MIMP.
MIMP.
Fooled everybody in the house.
All
right. Good job, guys. Let's close tonight. What we need is a good round of what's the difference. What do you say?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
A good round.
So, Carolyn, what's the difference between a trailer and a preview?
Well, a trailer...
Would be at the end,
and a preview would be at the beginning, but that's not right.
Oh, yes, it is.
It is. It's right.
Yeah. There's one more element involved here, and you got 10 points.
All right.
One more element.
Yep.
Well, the trailer, I thought the trailer has a whole collection of scenes that basically springs out the entire story, and a preview doesn't.
It's like a tease.
It's like a tease, without giving away anything.
They usually put the best lines in the movie in it.
Yeah, right.
You know what?
Maybe all of them.
I'm going to give you the 10 points.
Oh,
it's a pretty generous 10 points.
Oh,
because
it has nothing to do with what we just said.
Well, no. It's just that it's very rigidly limited. Do you know that a preview is limited by industry code to 2.5 minutes in length?
Yeah. Okay.
And cannot be any longer, whereas a trailer can. But you're right. Trailers ran traditionally after the features, and they no longer exist. And do you know why, of course?
Nobody stayed.
Nobody stayed to see the trailer. They all walked out after the picture. So they are almost synonymous, but a trailer can be of any length, and a preview has to be 2.5 minutes by standard. All right. Try this one, Tony. What's the difference between a skill and a talent?
How much you can charge for it, I would imagine.
10 points. Exactly right. That's exactly right, bud.
I mean, a talent you're born with, or at least it's inherent in some deep way, and a skill is something you have to acquire through study and a course of training.
I'm glad I gave you the 10 points. That's right on the nose. Very good. 10 points. Arnie, what's the difference between a goblet and a chalice?
Oh.
Are we doing Danny Kaye?
You could if you want.
The palace.
Carolyn just said a chalice has handles.
No, it doesn't actually.
It does not.
A chalice does not have handles.
Okay, a chalice.
So you've lost a point or two there.
A goblet is a glass with a stem.
Yes.
But a chalice is not a glass with a stem.
It's metal.
A chalice is not made of glass.
Didn't you do
the chalice from the palace holds the brew that is
brew that is two and
that,
right.
Well, for sure you'd go there.
A
chalice is usually gold or silver. It's metal of some sort, and it's blessed often.
There you go.
Not always.
A goblet has no religious significance.
That's exactly right. Okay. So, you know, I'll give them the 10 points for that. I think that's good.
Oh.
They're both drinking cups with a stem and a base, but without handles. Take 1 point away. She said handles. Take 1 point away.
See?
They don't have handles. The chalice gets dressed up in its Sunday best as it's used to hold the wine during Mass and for religious significance.
That's what it is.
Yeah, the Vandals took the handles.
Try this one, Francine. What's the difference between amicable and amenable? Is it amenable or amenable?
Amenable.
Both.
The difference is an attorney's fee.
Yes, that's probably true.
You're friendly.
Amicable,
right?
Is a friendly amica, friend.
Yes.
A friendly amicable situation. Amenable is willing.
Yeah,
willing.
Going along with.
Agreeable.
Consenting thing.
Agreeable, yes. I would say that's very good. It does connote that something is not completely mutual. Someone is exerting a little bit more force on you, whereas amicable is just just friendly, goodwill. Very good, 10 points. Try this one, Paula. What's the difference between a credo and a creed?
A creed. A creed is a system of belief, usually a system of belief represented by a religion. A credo can be non-religious.
It's a statement.
It's the whole belief system.
Yeah, it's like an individual.
It's like a manifesto.
Belief for
it's like a
tenet.
You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points for that.
Yeah.
Because the credo literally translated means I believe.
Right. I believe.
It has the connotation of being a personal belief system or a personal belief, mm-hmm. as opposed to a creed, which, as you say, is a belief system of a communal or formal religious nature.
Right.
So 10 points for that. And finally, very good. And Barry, one of my favorite questions of the day. What's the difference between swag and booty?
Swag and booty.
There's no swag call.
In what subculture are we talking about?
I don't care.
Can I venture?
Sure, please.
Swag you get, booty you take.
You know something? He's exactly right. 10 points. Actually, that's not exactly right, but it just was so pithy, I had to go with it.
That's good.
Booty is stolen. Swag's your stuff. Often given away. Remember the jolly swag man from Waltzing Matilda? The swag was his kit. Swag also means that a highwayman takes, but that's a much later meaning. Basically, it's your stuff. So that's the difference. Booty you take, swag you get. Very good. That leaves us with a final score. Boy, you needed that last one, and you came through, Tony. And you're this week's winners with 90 points. Congratulations. Good job. That is all we have time for this week. I want to thank everybody here at the Skirball Center, Jordan Pimer, Chris Kapp, Amina Sanchez, Ernie Mendonca, and all the people here at the Skirball that make us so comfortable every time we come out. Mark Holden and Wesley Dewberry man the meters. Zach Moore is the associate producer and webmaster. And once every few weeks, we get to remind you that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thank you, LA,
thank you
for showing up. See you next week.
Support for SOZU in Los Angeles comes from the Skirball Cultural Center. Exhibits, tours, and special events for all ages and interests. On the web at skirball.org. That's SKIRBALL. Benjamin and the Skinny.
SOZU, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
You've been listening to Says You on 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all of our programs, listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org.
Goodwill Industries of Middle Tennessee has 17 career solution centers throughout Middle and West Tennessee that provide job training, job search, and computer skills for thousands of Tennesseans each year. Career counselors partner with employers to identify job-ready candidates prepared to enter the workforce. These services are provided thanks to generous donors who give gently used items, which are in turn sold at one of 30 retail stores in the 46 counties served by Goodwill. Learn more at goodwillcareersolutions.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Alec Baldwin. He's starring in two new films. He's a long-haired club owner in Rock of Ages, the big-screen adaptation of the Broadway musical. He also stars in the new Woody Allen comedy, To Roam with Love. And, of course, he's best known for his role as Jack Donaghy on the hit NBC series 30 Rock. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Big news week as the Supreme Court session nears its end. We'll parse the decisions on immigration and health care and go swimming. Millions are, but did you know there are travel companies just for sending people to swim boot camps? We'll paddle around with author Lynn Scherr. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Weekdays at noon. Nashville weather for today, sunny skies and the high in the mid-90s, mostly clear tonight, low in the upper 60s.